welcome to No Filter Sports. It is September 21st, 2020. Eli Zarrett, Denny McClain, and no Bob Page today. He tried his best, but we had a connection issue. And it's the strangest one. You know, Denny, we're in a world now where a lot of things go wrong, whether you got people dying from the pandemic, hundreds of thousands, whether, you know, various agencies never work. Everything seems to be falling apart. But to not be able to plug something into a hole you've plugged it into 50 times or 100 times shows that maybe the world is falling apart. I mean, go ahead.
You know, it's like we're in the mode of anything that can go wrong will eventually go wrong.
It's Murphy's Law.
You know, the thing with Bob, though, every week Bob has an issue. I mean, every week in his terminology, it takes us 20 minutes to understand what the hell he's trying to tell us. So as far as Geek Town, he is spelled geek backwards.
Well, I think we're all kind of technologically incompetent in many ways, but certainly we know how to plug into the wall. We know how to plug a plug into our computer, and for some reason, the basic USB plug going into a USB port didn't work. So it's Eli and Denny again. The first time I've done a show alone since
long time.
Oh my God, probably go back to the 90s. Yeah. Anyway, Brandon McAfee is here, and we invited Fred Heumann to join us in case he wants to pop back in. I enjoyed the last show you guys did. I listened to it driving up north the other day, and Darren was great, and I liked the discussion. It's a pretty entertaining show. Maybe it's better when I'm not on it. I don't know.
I don't think so, but I will tell you that he was terrifically entertaining. He was having a good time. I mean, I thought he was going to do another hour. That's how scared I got at about 30 minutes into the show, and I said, my God, this guy's never going to get off.
Yeah.
Darren was very good. He was really very good.
He's doing well. He turned his life around. I thought a lot of it was very, very emotional. The parts about him being an insomniac, he took all those blows to the head, how marijuana helps him sleep, and a good show. Anyway, we also today we hope we have a good show too, even though we have to start with some really I don't want to call it disturbing news about the Lions, who lost 42-21 to Green Bay. Let me explain something off the top, and that is, I'm very grateful to have been a reporter. I have no complaints. It's a terrific job. I've gotten to cover sports and do what most people would do for fun. My attitude towards the Lions is that I didn't grow up watching them, but I've enjoyed covering them. I met so many great players. And unlike fans, I don't feel anger. I don't, call up talk shows and call for the firings and eviscerate the Fords. Sometimes I laugh. When it's really hopeless, sometimes I hope they lose big. They can make a change and make my job more interesting with a new coach. But at this point, a lot of Lion fans are angry, and maybe they've been angry for so many years, for so long, that they didn't even know what to say anymore. But Patricia and the Lions are off to an awful start, blowing these leads. And I don't see a lot of hope. And Peter King, by the way, the notorious football writer, said today, it's September 21st and Matt Patricia looks done already. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, I'll tell you two things to start with. Aaron Rodgers is still Aaron Rodgers, and the Lions are still the Lions. Yesterday, and I wrote a number of things down, just a couple things anyway, Stafford wasn't under much duress all day long, not much at all. They did pick up over 4 yards per carry running the ball, and they quit running it. Abushi, filling in at the left guard for Joe Dahl, committed 2 penalties. And what I'm trying to point out is the number of errors that Patricia's teams are making. That's what I'm trying to point out. I thought he was this monster defensive coach that had all these clever schemes and great grand planning, and we don't even have a pass rush. That's how bad it is right now. So getting beat by 20 points, I don't even think that it could have been a lot more than that if they really let all the guns out yesterday. It was, to some degree, you and I have been in this town a long time, right? Forever. Mm-hmm. And they've never won. And to think that they hired Patricia after the last coach went 2 years in a row, 9-7. So, nothing ever balances right with the Lions.
The mistake, listen, all teams make mistakes. And this is not the only city where people complain about their football team. Every fan base thinks that they're the worst, except for the, obviously the few that like the Patriots that, that win all the time. Yeah. Every loss seems like it, it came from left field and should never have happened. And it means that we suck, but you're right. The 63 years of not winning and having coaches who are unproven, who and then prove to be unsuccessful. I want to get back to the game itself because the game was awful in so many ways, but I went back and looked at everybody the Lions have hired. Because it seems to me they go for coordinators who are unproven. And I go all the way back to Rick Forzano when I first started covering them. Oh, yeah. He was a college coach who wasn't fit to make it in the NFL, as great and nice a man as he was. Tommy Hutspeth followed him, came from the CFL. Monty Clark followed him. He was a line coach with the Dolphins. Then they took Daryl Rogers, who was a college coach, never a successful NFL coach.
Never.
It was Wayne Font, so a great coordinator. And Wayne, because the Ford stuck with him for a while and he would win games at the end of the year, is turns out to be the winningest coach ever. But he was a coordinator and barely over 500. Then they finally hired a coach, Bobby Ross, who had coached before with the Chargers. But he was such a departure from Fonts, the players disliked him immediately. Barry Sanders hated him, and that didn't work either. Then they get Gary Moeller, who had been a terrific college coach and a pro coordinator, and he finished up for Ross, and he did very, very well. But they fired him because then Millen came in and wanted to bring his own guy, and he listened to Bill Walsh, who said, "I got a great offensive coordinator. Give him a job." And Millen gave Marty Morningwick a job, who's a great coordinator but an awful head coach. I forget what his record was. He started out with a 2-14 season. Then they finally get an established coach, Steve Mariucci, who had been with the 49ers. But he was obviously not into it. Didn't really work very hard.
Right.
And he was a failure. Then they ended the season with him with Dick Geron, who was a great former Lion as an assistant coach. They got rid of him. Then Rod Marinelli, a coordinator. Then Jim Schwartz, a coordinator. Then they get a good coach, and Jim Caldwell won 11 games
a year. A good guy.
Guy besides Ross and Mariucci. And they get rid of him to bring in Patricia, coordinator who only makes Bill Belichick look like even more of a genius, doesn't he?
It's amazing. It's just amazing to me. You know, and the thing, what I would do at this point in time with this football team, I mean, the people are going to jump up and down, especially Brandon. I take the quarterback right now and try to make myself a major league organizational trade. I try to go out and get 3, 4, 5 players for Stafford. And I think you can get that many good players.
Do you think, wait a minute, at this point of the season when teams are already established and have schemes and all that?
People are asking the kid at Ohio State to come out now and join the NFL. And I don't know if they can do that either. But you know what? Stafford, he can call his own shots with just about any other ball club out there, with the exception of the ones we understand that have great quarterbacks. But you know what? I just think it's time for a monster change. Or my other suggestion is maybe the Fords need to let it go. Sell it. Sell it to
you can't do
football
it.
People.
This is so classic. You know, there was an internet article, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, I thought was hilarious, where somebody wrote about the 6 levels of Lion fans. Now, level one is they lose their first 2 games like this. We're going to win the next 14 to go to the Super Bowl. All the way down to the number 6 level, which is, I sold my season tickets. I will never watch another game till the Ford sell this team. Like I say, I watch it all. I don't have any high expectations. That's why I don't feel any disappointment. You expect something like this to happen. And you're right. The penalties, Will Harris. I mean, when you look at it, not that it only happens here, the back-to-back unnecessary roughness penalties that gives the Pack the lead at 17-14. Then Stafford takes a sack near the end zone, which you're not supposed to do. Then they let Aaron Jones. Is it Aaron Jones?
Yeah.
Run for 75 yards. First play, the defensive genius, Matt Patricia, allows holes in the line. And everybody's up front. He bursts right through and outruns everybody. And then the pick 6. And that's 31 points like that. They are the only team in NFL history. This is the big stat that everybody's quoting here on Monday. That they're the only team to lose 4 straight games after blowing double-digit leads.
Well, how many have they lost in a row now? Nine or 11?
11.
I mean, when does this stop? And I mean, you know what? With the teams that they're going to play the next 3 or 4 weeks, they could be 0-5, 0-6, 0-7. Because you know what? When a team starts to go bad, especially in the beginning of the season, it's tough to recover. It's tough to get everybody. And plus, they got some injuries now. Mm-hmm. You know, I just don't know if there's an answer other than what we've already talked about.
Well, there is no answer, because if you fire Patricia, that means Bob Quinn fires him. Bob Quinn and Patricia are tied at the hip. That means that Bob Quinn is also firing himself, because he'll be done at the end of the season. You can't bring in a new coach at this point. It's going to have to be one of the assistants that he also hired.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Is Patricia that much poison that one of his assistants is going to do better?
Go ahead. But let me ask you a question. What has Bob Quinn done?
Nothing.
Nothing.
He's 9-24-1.
You know what? And I know the Ford. They're a great family. They do a ton of things for the city.
Great charities. You know,
monster charities. But for some reason, somehow, some way, they had no concept about a football team.
They gave Patricia and Quinn another year, which was the safe and easy thing to do. But let's ask Brandon, who is a diehard Lion fan, and give some perspective to jaded, guys like us that have no expectations. Amen. Tell us, Brandon, where's your heart today? Where's your mind? Where's your whole Lion,
psyche
aura today? Psyche.
This isn't anything different for me. I'm 35 years old. This is the norm. This is what I'm used to. Now, granted, I do think that they ran into a very angry Aaron Rodgers. This guy's going to be on a revenge tour since the Packers took Jordan Love in the first round of the draft.
Yeah.
So I do think that there's that aspect. But ultimately, I just think Patricia's the wrong guy. He's got a stupid, massive ego. Nobody really likes him. He started his career here getting sexual allegations. You know, and it's just, it's time for him to go. But more or less, I think it's time for Bob Quinn just to say, all right, listen, I was a part of the New England Patriots when they had success, but the success had nothing to do with me. And just start over again. This is that same thing we see every few years. New GM, new round of coaches, like the 15 that you just rolled through, Eli. It's the same old
But go
Lions.
Out, Brandon, but go out and get established people. Get major leaguers there.
Yes, who's won.
Yes, somebody who knows what a W means. Just anybody that knows what a W means.
Who's been an NFL coach. Right.
Yeah, 2-10, 2-12, 2-14. That's not going to get it again this year, although it looks like it.
And Patricia, I must say, and I'm not going to, it's the cheapest thing to say the way somebody looks, but when somebody's doing this badly, you look at him and say, do you even look like a head coach? The guy, Andy Reid's pretty overweight also, so maybe that's not fair to do, but he just looks terrible. And he also, he's inexperienced talking to the media. He says the same things over and over again. Here's some of the quotes. You got to push forward. Not a good game. Got to credit the Packers. A lot of work. Got to coach better. Got to improve all around.
Cliches. Well, platitudes.
So here's three different questions and basically the same answer. The first question was, he was asked about the rushing game. Here's his answer to the rushing game.
Obviously, we got a lot of work to do, and we got to be consistent in what we're doing, and we got to get it coached up better and understand the techniques and improve it all the way around. It's early in the year, but it's still got to be good. You know, we got to do a better job than what we're doing right now, and especially to come out to start the second half. Those plays can happen when you got a dangerous back like that, but we need to do a better job being ready to go.
He said nothing.
Nothing.
Okay, here's another question. Maybe he can give more insight on this question. The other question was, do you have the players you need to win? Here's what he said about that.
I mean, I got all the confidence in the world in these guys. You know, we just got to go out and do it. You know, we got to stop, doing things that hurt our team and hurt us, and just make sure that we're, trying to, execute at a high level, coaching.
He didn't say anything.
He gave up 42 points yesterday.
Well, but here, maybe this will be different. He was asked if he has confidence, his level of confidence to be able to turn it all around.
Change happens every year, and, we had a lot of change over last year, and, it's our first time kind of going with, everybody that we have from coaching and playing. So we're going to keep pushing. We're going to keep getting, our work and try to improve. But, at this point, it's early, and we got to kind of just, do everything we can to get it better.
One nonsensical excuse.
It's early. As the great philosopher Lawrence Peter Barrow once said, when they were on the road and they went out to eat and the restaurants were closed, he says, it gets late real early around here. So it's getting late, real early in the season for Matt Patricia. You see, here I am kind of laughing, and I because as Brandon said, we've been down this road before. It isn't like we're going to have some outrage. How could this happen to our Detroit Lions? This is an outrage. We've seen it year in, year out. And the other thing is, I mean, I've met so many great people through the Lions over the years.
Yeah, you're
so
right.
Many people that I just have so much respect for. I worked with Gary Danielson for years, you know, Chris Spielman, just some really wonderful, yep, James Hound Dog Hunter, just some really great people have come through, and they've all get asked the same questions, you know, about what's with the institutional losing. There is no real answer. The only continuity is the Fords, and they are still here, and it is their team.
And the only little bright light they had was they were averaging more than 4 yards a carry with the football. So, I mean, that was the only bright light there was, but they didn't run the ball enough.
Right, right. And there, by the way, Jeff Okudah was the highest used pick for a quarterback in 30 years, the third pick.
Really?
And he may be a great player someday, but man, he ain't ready. He got lit up yesterday.
Sure did.
Brandon, anything else before we move on from the Lions? Would you care to make a postscript? Do you hold any optimism? And Bob's question last week was a valid one, and that was, will Patricia last the season?
No.
I wasn't prepared to say that, and I certainly, when they went up 14-3, were moving that ball down the field like Super Bowl potential champions. Oh, they led 14-3, and then the turnaround was sudden. So,
and Brandon, yeah, do you watch the entire Lions game when you watch it now?
Sure.
You do?
Well, yeah, I try to. Obviously, I flip during commercials to see how my fantasy team's doing on the other teams. But, you know, I do catch it all, rewind and everything like that. I'm ultimately going to see this team face an Arizona Cardinals team next week that is red hot. Kyler Murray is just killing it. Then they got to go against Drew Brees and the Saints. Who knows if Michael Thomas will be back in that one. But we're looking at 0-4 likely. I would say Matt Patricia goes 0-5. There's no way he sticks around.
I just don't believe that the Lions
right?
would trade. I don't think they get rid of him. I think they're locked at the hip for some reason. I think they like him personally. And Quinn, of course, is in love with him.
Denny, I'll be
shocked if they fire him.
If they felt there was a player revolt. I remember when Forzano was 1-4, this is 1976, I was a young reporter, and I've told the story before because there's so much drama. If they're 0-4, and you're covering, of course, you can't cover the team like you used to. You're going to just feel the drama at the stadium. Players are going to start grousing. They're going to start pointing the finger. The pressure's going to be on the coach. And unless there's a total revolt, which happened against Forzano when he was 1-4, then they would fire Patricia and let one of his assistants that they like, that the players have some respect for, who has some credentials. But, you know, it has to come down to the coach, even when, like Jamal Agnew, on the he makes a fair catch and then blocks somebody. Yeah. This is the job of a punt returner. There's only two or three things you have to really remember to do. And one of them is, if you call a fair catch, you can't block anybody. And he did it. And so it has to come down to the coach, ultimately, when players make mistakes like that over and over and over again. And you know, as I said in the beginning, I'm grateful to have been a reporter, even though when I'm watching a game like that, I say to myself, this is 3.5 hours on a perfect fall day that I will never get back.
Well, you know, though, I mean, it is the rite of passage on Sundays with the Lions. I mean, that's all there is to it. I mean, I watch every game. I just like watching a football game. And if I got the Bears on another channel, I go back and forth between the two of them, and I pray. By the way, I've got the greatest quarterback in the NFL.
Oh, right. Let's talk about some of the other games. Also want to talk about
2-0. Stop it.
You know, you guys were talking about why NFL ratings are down, and I thought you left a couple of facts out of that conversation or thoughts. I want to get into that too. But first, I want to tell you that, you know that with the pandemic, a lot of people have been drinking more, and there's a lot of addiction that wouldn't have otherwise happened as we struggle through this. And since 2017, the Hope Not Handcuffs program has helped 4,600 people get the help and resources they may not have gotten otherwise. And anybody struggling out there with a substance abuse disorder or addiction, whether it be heroin, painkillers, cocaine, alcohol. You can go into one of 100 participating police locations and ask for help with no fear of being arrested. The police officer will treat you with compassion. Call a volunteer angel that'll come to the police department and assist with the paperwork, make the phone calls to get you placed or your loved one into treatment that day. The first step doesn't need to be the hardest. There is hope. Go to hopenothandcuffs.com. That's hopenothandcuffs.com to learn more and make the step towards recovery. And with social distancing, as you know, you don't need your reading glasses to see somebody 6 feet away, but you still can't see your phone without your readers. That's why so many people 45 and over who have lost their close vision have been getting multifocal lens implants that enable you to see the tiniest print, also see perfectly at a distance. It's a life-changing and lifetime-lasting procedure. That's why you need to see Dr. Yaldo. People over 45 still opting for custom LASIK from Dr. Yaldo will also find that they can see once and for all by throwing their annoying glasses and contacts in the garbage for good. These surgeries are the safest with the fewest side effects in all of medicine. You do not need to deal with ancient technologies like readers, like glasses, like contacts. Get a free evaluation. Doesn't cost a thing. Find out which procedure will change your life in ways you can only imagine. Call 1-800-398-EYES or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. Tell them No Filter Sports sent you. You'll save $1,500 off the regular price. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. So we put the lines aside. I'm throwing all my line stuff in the garbage right here for another week. Goes by, we play they play Arizona next week. Well, hopefully won't be a different, it'll be a different story then, but this is where we are today. You guys were talking last week about the NFL ratings being down 11%, remember?
Yep.
And you made some good points. You talked about Black Lives Matter. And you know what, Denny? I'm watching the game and I'm watching the NBA. And I'm saying, you know, it's almost like it's become advertising. And when you see a spot too much, like you see the guy in the bathtub on the Xfinity ad, if I see that again, I just turn the volume down. It's just too much. It's overkill. And you guys brought that point up adequately that people have fatigue from it. They just want to escape.
Sure.
And that's one legitimate reason. The other thing I think, and I don't know whether you brought this up, is the phoniness, the crowd noise. In fact, when the game started yesterday, Chris Myers was, and I don't know who the color commentator was. I never got that straight, but Chris Myers is doing the play-by-play. Yeah. And he goes, it's so quiet in here. Isn't it a strange atmosphere? Well, we heard plenty of noise. We heard the fake crowd noise, which again shows the phoniness of it. There's no color. The game is almost like it's a video game. It's an avatar of itself. But here's the one that you guys didn't mention that I thought is significant. And that is, the games have lost legitimacy. And I'm just talking football, all of them. You know, we've been fed, we've absorbed, taken as gospel. You know, you play 162 games, or the NBA plays 81 games, and we've honored, revered, we've cheered for all these years. And now it's like we can make it up as we go along. And it shows the owners are just promoters. It's like the circus is back in town. And no elephants this time, and no dancing girls, and no acrobats, but we're going to give you sports anyways. That makes sense. It just seems illegitimate.
First of all, they're not going to play if they're not making money. I mean, let's not play because they're playing for the greater good. I mean, that is hardly the reason they're playing. They're playing right for paychecks. They're playing for money, real money. I mean, I don't know what the average salary in the NBA in the NFL right now is, but it's got to be at least a million and a half dollars a year. I mean, that's real walking around money.
About 2.7 million. Yeah.
What's that?
Actually, about 2.7 million.
Okay, 2.7. I was on the low side. Let's give everybody a bigger raise. And bottom line simply is, listen, it's a business. And if you haven't seen this business in action, we've seen it this year. People or no people, food or no food, parking or no parking, partying before the game, partying after the game, doesn't make any difference. They're still making tens and tens of millions of dollars, which is okay with me. I love to see people make money. But, you know, if they're trying to tell us that this is bringing back the community, this is bringing back our environment, that's just not true. Because nothing else is working very well.
But it's the illegitimacy when you put a man on second to start extra innings. They've added a playoff team to the NFL, I suppose. They probably made fewer changes than the rest. But, but here's the other reason. Here's the point was, why are ratings down 11%? And Brandon, maybe you'll agree with this. There was no buildup. There was no preseason. It just kind of started. And the fantasy sports has declined by a significant amount. Yeah. Teams are usually locked up in fantasy by July. I don't play it.
Sure.
But the organization in August, people were saying we can't get enough guys to be in the league. They didn't, weren't sure there's going to be a season. So the lack of fantasy players is reducing the number of people watching on TV because you guys couldn't figure out why that would be with the pent up. What do you think?
I don't know if it's because of the fantasy or if it's just because of this entire pandemic. And what I mean by that is earlier in the year, when I had my baseball fantasy draft, yeah, that came and it was like, oh my God, I haven't prepped for this. I haven't even read up on anything. And the reason being is my mind was somewhere else. It was amidst this pandemic.
Sure.
I didn't even believe that the MLB season would be would complete, in which we now know that it looks like it is going to complete. And we're going to get into that MLB playoff bubble. We'll probably talk about that in a little bit. But same thing with the NFL. When that came around, I knew a lot of diehard fantasy people who just didn't really seem like they were really into it this year. And I don't think it had anything to do with any of the messaging that the NFL is trying to throw
That's
out there.
That's a good point.
I just think that everybody's mind is somewhere else in 2020. And I'm very surprised that the ratings haven't been high. I just figured everybody was at home. They would want to just watch this to escape. But I think it reminds you when you see a massive stadium that's empty that we're still, you know, in this pandemic that we have no idea when it will end.
Right, but that's the phony.
I'll give you a perfect example. I belong to two or three guys, two or three groups that they bet every football game on Sundays. And at the end of the season, somebody wins, you know, $1,000, $1,500, whatever it might be. And I can tell you that last year when this thing started, I was intense. I mean, I looked at every game. I was doing the under and over and all the other things, worried about the quarterback, who's going to get hurt, who's not going to get hurt. And you know what? This year, I barely get my picks in every Sunday, just barely before 1 o'clock. So I'm not paying attention to it anymore. I don't grab a newspaper anymore. I don't go online. I just take a quick look at who's playing who, and I take the best team that I assume is the best team. So
then
you're
affirming.
Right. You're absolutely right about it.
There was no buildup, so people didn't get into fantasy like Brandon, and that therefore viewership goes down. And the same with Hard Knocks. Last year, Hard Knocks averaged 900,000 viewers. It's dropped down to 300,000 viewers this year, which means that it's down by a third.
Yeah, we'll see if these ratings jump up. I expect them to as people get, you know, more into the season. Maybe not locally because our team will suck, but we'll also have to see in some of those bigger markets how it reacts when you have major, major injuries, because week two had a lot of big, big injuries. Tyrod Taylor was injured out.
Yeah.
We lost, I mean, Christian McCaffrey.
Really?
The best running back. Yeah, he's got a hurt ankle.
Garoppolo got hurt, but he went back in the game. Nick Bosa screwed up his knee. Yeah,
Drew Locke, the quarterback of the Broncos. Saquon Barkley hurt his knee. Sterling Shepard on his toe. So that's a big blow to Bob's Giants. And yeah, we'll see what happens.
Well, I hate to use this term epidemic, but there's an epidemic in the NFL. First week too, they had a lot of injuries, and this week I think they doubled or tripled what they had last week. So
lack of preseason stuff like that.
Preseason, absolutely.
And it shows again. You know, people say, well, why not just eliminate two preseason games and play 18 regular season games? The players don't want that, man. It is attrition. It is nasty. And speaking of attrition, by the way, I want to get into Bryson DeChambeau, but we can wait a second on that. I think we're on the football topic here. I mean, college football Saturday was a joke. Teams are dropping out. You had, what was it? Was it Memphis? Memphis canceled its game next week with the University of Texas San Antonio. So USTA just decided to schedule Middle Tennessee next week. So you go from Memphis to Middle Tennessee, and they're just picking up games as they go. There are only two games involving top 10 teams. So, and now you got the Big Ten. By the way, you have the Big Ten coming up with the excellent plan, they say, for football, for athletes and the coaches. This is Linda Vale, lead health officer in Ingham County, Michigan, includes Michigan State. Then she goes on to say, but the conditions right now aren't good enough to have football games. They could improve between now and October 23rd when the Big Ten hopes to start, but they're not ready now. If these metrics persist, I'm going to have to say that Michigan State football won't happen in East Lansing.
Well, the appearance is exhibition type sports right now. I mean, when you can just drop one team to play another team in the same week, I mean, with major colleges, I mean, something's going on that nobody likes and nobody's going to accept and nobody's going to show up for the game. Although down south, they do crazy things. Hey, Fred, how are you, buddy?
Hey, Freddie.
Am I there?
You are. You're with us, Freddie.
We had a technical issue with Bob that's almost laughable, where he couldn't plug a USB cord or USB plug into a USB receiver. But we already talked about the Lions. We got that out of the way. You have any comment you want to make about the Lions?
Just that they continue to be a laughing stock. I feel like, you know, a lot of times when we talk about the Lions, and Eli, you know this, I feel like we just did this last week, and we just did this 10 years ago, and we just did this 20 years ago, and we just did this 50 years ago.
Yep.
I don't know what there's new to say. I shared last week on the show that I think of all the coaching hires they've made, that the one they have now is the worst. I think he's the worst coach of my lifetime with the Lions. I think he's terrible. And yesterday showed, I mean, to throw a pass there when you're trying to protect a 4-point lead at the end of the half and invite the Packers back in the game was just hideous. And granted, you know, Stafford shouldn't have taken the sack in that spot. I get that. But you don't even put him in that position. It just goes on and on and on. And the people that he believes, one of the people he believes in, got two straight penalties for 15 yards. Yeah. You know, he just continues to be just a laughing stock. He's terrible.
I know. And the thing where we left it off was that, will he be fired this year? And I said, the only way he'll be fired is if there's a total player revolt and they got to go with an assistant coach who has credibility. I've seen it happen when I worked for the Pistons, and John Kuster became a laughing stock among the players. Rip Hamilton called him a fake and a fraud and a phony in front of the whole team, and nothing happened. There was Joe Dumars promised that they would fire him, and he didn't. And what they wanted to do, if Mrs. Davidson would have let Joe fire him, they're going to bring Darrell Walker in because Darrell Walker had the respect of the players. And so I know who's on Patricia's staff that they would respect, but that's the only way they'll get rid of him. But if Bob Quinn fires him, then Bob Quinn should be firing himself because they're both as equal. Anyway,
well, they'll probably clean it out again after this year. I don't know what helps during the year, but that Kuster thing's a good analogy. I don't know that these players will revolt, but I'll tell you right now, if they let Patricia go, there would be a private party. I promise you.
Well, you know,
with no social distancing. Right.
You know, not only the coach, but Quinn's got to go too, because Quinn is responsible for these hires. So Quinn's got to go right with him at the same moment, because, listen, they need to move better people into the front office that understands the NFL. Bring some people in who have won in the past. Quit giving people chances.
But I go to what I said at the top, Denny. We were saying the same thing 50 years ago.
Yep, absolutely.
But I read the list. The only coaches they've had since Rick Forzano who had any coaching experience or winning in the NFL was Bobby Ross, then Mariucci, who just didn't have the heart to do it anymore, and Jim Caldwell, who was a good coach, but of course they got rid of Caldwell, who was a proven, played in the Super Bowl, had a 15-1 season and a 11-5 season here, but they brought in Patricia instead. Here's my question. I don't want to get too deeply into the Big Ten here.
Yeah.
Yes or no? Will Michigan and Michigan State play all their games as scheduled?
I believe yes.
I do too.
I believe yes.
Good luck.
Because I understand. Believe me, when I'm saying that, I don't think you're crazy to suggest they might not. I just got a hunch they will, but I understand the skepticism, especially what's going on in this state.
But are they going to allow people into Michigan Stadium?
I don't
know. No.
Okay.
No,
I don't think all right. So, no. Well, then they got a shot at playing all their games.
No fans.
If you let people in, you're dead.
Right. Fans would only complicate the process at this point.
Absolutely.
Can I get
about Gardy?
Okay. Go ahead. Get into Gardy's.
Well, I don't think that, you know, I don't think there's anything more to it than what he said. I happened to be listening to when they broke into the pregame show on Saturday, and they carried his announcement and Al Avila's announcement. And I think it is what it is. I think he was going to retire at the end of the year. That we would have found that out in 10 days or so or a week. And he decided that his hands were shaking when he's driving to the ballpark. He had a bout with a week ago or 2 weeks ago with what he believes was food poisoning. He still feels crummy from that. He's had a cancer history. He's got kids and grandkids, and he just decided, I'm not going to play this out. And he told Avila, this is it. I'm done today.
Well, I talked to somebody down there yesterday, and they say, no, there was more to it than that. And we'll find out in a day or two what most of it was all about. But it happened too quick. You know, with seven games to go, you had nothing to lose at that point in time. And listen, let me point out one thing. I know they talk about Gardy, what a great guy is, and he is a great guy, but a great manager and this and this and this. He's the least successful manager in the history of the Detroit Tigers. The least successful. He had a winning percentage of .355.
Well, you so mean in his all of
these
career.
All of these accolades really become a pain in the ass. I mean, they should just leave some numbers alone. Leave that one out of the range.
That's really not fair because, you know, Sparky Anderson, look at him from 1989 to 1995. He might only won 35% of his games.
And I
but overall, he had a lot of, you know.
And I probably said something about it then, too. Yeah. I mean, because we're just full of accolades when, unfortunately, somebody passes. Or number two, when we get rid of a nice guy. And they don't make him any better than Gardy, but, you know, he was dealt a bad hand. Somehow they mismanaged whatever they had. If they had anything, they've mismanaged in a serious way because
they have not
started building a nucleus yet. They've got a makeup on paper team right now.
I agree.
I understand what you're saying, Denny, and I do believe the nice guy thing gets a lot of people a lot more accolades. Okay, he was a nice guy, and he was a terrific manager in Minnesota. But he took over a train wreck here. He knew what it was. He knew he was going to lose a ton of games. He ended up 90-some games under .500 in his Detroit career. And Eli makes the analogy to Sparky. Yeah, there's some bad Sparky years in there. The organization is in transition. So to judge him on his managing record in Detroit, I side with Eli. I don't think that's fair, but I get what you're saying. We kind of build up people a little too much when they're nice.
Yeah, I mean, with the Twins, he made six postseasons in 13 years with the Twins. I think he's proven himself as a manager, and he can walk away without this staining his record. Unfortunately, he can't, as Ralph Houk said, announce that, quote, the job is done, because with Ralph, it kind of was. They had Lou, and they had Jack, and they had Tram, and they had Lance, and they had Gibby, and they had all these guys coming up that won a championship 5 years later. So not quite the same situation.
Hey, guys, in less than 3 years, you lost 241 games. Come on.
Look at the roster, Danny.
I don't care. Listen, somebody's got to go out and get the talent. If it's Avila, so Avila should go with him, as a matter of fact. But, you know, the organization, until they pull in some professional people, and they don't have them in the organization now, and I suggest to you Lloyd McClendon is not the answer. I still think Lance Parrish should get a shot.
He won't be the manager.
Because I saw him work with those kids in Grand Rapids. He communicates with them. They respect him. They like him a lot. Give him a shot.
But Lance Lance hasn't been named as one of the people that it's expected to be considered for the job. John Morosi.
That's speculation, though. That's just speculation.
Okay. I understand.
I haven't seen the list. Brandon, maybe you're going to help me with this. Is Joey Carr and A.J. Hinch on it?
A.J. Hinch is on it. Will Venable, George Lombard, Vance Wilson, Don Kelly, Pedro Griffel, and Mike Redman, as well as Lloyd McClendon.
Joey Carr is not on it?
Not that I've seen.
Because if I remember correctly, and I may stand corrected in this, he was a candidate when Ausmus got it. He may even have been a runner-up. And didn't get the job. So I'm surprised Cora wouldn't be considered.
Especially because he's an Hispanic player, and the Tigers are loaded with Hispanic players.
Absolutely. That's not a small factor.
As far as Hinch goes, Hinch will never get the job, but knowing the nature of the Illiches, they would never hire him.
Because of the Astros thing?
Because of the Astros thing.
Well, Mike Ilitch isn't here anymore, so I don't know. One of we enjoyed seeing Willie Castro, Reyes, guys who put so much time in the minor leagues to finally make it. There were some really nice stories aside from the awful pitching. To me, the saddest thing is that it's really over for Cabrera. He was reasonably healthy this year. He had a lot of free time, not a lot of games to play, plenty of time off because, you know, the delay of the season starting. 232, but the big number is the OPS. 750 is the average OPS in Major League Baseball. He's at 692.
Yeah.
1,000 is outstanding, and Candelaria, to his credit, is 894. But for Cabrera, at you know, to only have a 692 OPS without being able, as you said, Denny, he can't get around on the inside pitch anywhere. I don't know why his upper body.
His lower body is hurting. His whole lower body can't do what it used to do. Not only the inside pitch, but I was watching Saturday night. There were a couple balls in it with two strike counts that he used to drive to right center field in every single occasion, and he whiffed. You know, turning back the clock, don't get me started on this. When we heard all the reports in spring training, both the first spring training and the second spring training, the summer training, how great a shape he's in, how much better he's taken. I acknowledge all that, right. But being in shape doesn't allow you to hit a 2-2 pitch that's going 96 miles an hour and doing tricks. You can't get around on those. He can't hit those pitches anymore. I don't care what he could be Hercules. He can't hit those
first
pitches
of all,
anymore.
First of all, the pitch that's getting him is the hard fastball inside. He's overmatched on the ball inside. Anything else he chases off the plate, that's a different story because somebody probably made a good pitch. But the pitch inside is the one he can't handle anymore. And if you can't handle that pitch, and between that and not running out to first base, he's pissed a lot of people off. And you may smirk a little bit, but you know what? The least the guy can do in that game is run to first base. That's the least the guy can do, and especially for $30 million a
year. If he can't run, though, then that's another
reason. Then quit. Get out of here.
We got into that last year, you know, and I got heavily criticized. I got a Twitter beat down when I said at $30 million a year, if you're good enough to get on the field, you want to at least run out a ground ball.
Yes.
In case they make an error, you don't stop halfway to first base and coast in.
Disagreed with you?
I want to talk to you a little bit about whether Justin Verlander is done, but first I want to remind everybody that everyone in Michigan knows Lincoln's legacy of luxury cars, and in buying a Lincoln and McInerney Star Lincoln, you find both the buying and the service elements to be hassle-free, and what an experience. It's part of why Star Lincoln is Michigan's premier Lincoln dealership, an exemplary family business started by Hoot, the legendary auto giant and philanthropist. In July alone, Star got nearly 105 star reviews. Here's a few. One woman reflected that what many have written saying, my entire experience was more than wonderful. Another wrote, the buying process during this pandemic was made so easy at Star and quicker than I anticipated. Drive the Star of American Auto Luxury at Star Lincoln. Make an appointment at 248-354-4900 or buy effortlessly online at starlincoln.com. And Power Home Solar, America's fastest growing solar energy company, is based right here in Metro Detroit. All of Power Home Solar's state-of-the-art panels are made in America. With solar energy from Power Home, you save money, save the environment, and save yourself those costly and incredibly infuriating power outages. Power Home Solar is partnered with Generac, which happens to be the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems. So with the two together, Power Home Solar's panels and Generac, you'll be protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for in-home energy. Lower your energy bills and eliminate power outages forever. They have financing starting at only $99 a month. Call them at 1-800-POWER-90. Save an additional $1,800. Join the movement to solar and let the sun shine in. And you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Well, maybe the Astros are done. They're 26-26. They got sixth place wrapped up, three ahead of Seattle, or six. I think it's six to play, something like that. But Justin Verlander is going to undergo Tommy John surgery. So Denny, he's thrown nearly 50,000 pitches, actually 49,000 of the 3,000 of the postseason. Add in spring training in the bullpen. It's a 14-month recovery. Up to that, could be as little as a year. So 2021 is out. He'll be 39 in 2022, coming off just one start in 2 years. Have we seen the last of Justin Verlander?
Well, we possibly could, because only 60% of the people who have Tommy John actually recover 100% or near 100%. And so the older you get, the less likely it is that you're going to recover to where you once were. Now, he's a smart guy. He's got better than average stuff than most guys. And if he can come back and just get the ball in the low 90s, somewhere around 90 miles an hour, I think he can still be successful. But, you know, he's at the end. I mean, there's no question. He's going to be 39, and he's going to take a whole year off. And I can tell you, when I just took 90 days off from spring training in 1971 or two, whatever year it was, I can tell you, it was really, really tough to get back into it. You just training and without that intensity, it is really tough to get yourself ready.
Well, the other thing, Denny, is you mentioned he's a year, he's really off 2 years because he didn't pitch at all this year, really.
That's right.
Yeah, and, one start. We talk about a shortened season. We don't think of it as a season, but in a calendar year, he will have gone 2 years without throwing a pitch. There's an old adage that you only have so many pitches.
Yeah.
But that isn't so much. That's not the same model for everybody, is it, Denny?
No.
That you only have so many pitches to throw in your life.
Yeah, but I will say this, that almost every pitcher who checks out of the game leaves with an injury, almost every guy, or they've had serious injuries during their career and have been lucky to get out of the game. I mean, my arm, I can't lift it above my shoulder, my right arm. So, I mean, that's been with me for the rest of my life. And that's what a lot of guys wind up with, the same thing I did. You can't use your arm that you pitch with. And, you know, it's just a matter of you're right, Fred. We all have so many pitches in there, and once we reach the end of the line, it becomes a very bad day. You're backing up third an awful lot.
There are too many Denny McClain's and Bartolo, not Denny, Mickey Lolich's and Bartolo Colon's out there, the pitch of 45, or for that matter, Nolan Ryan, who threw 100 miles an hour until he was 45. But how about Matt Boyd? 2-7, gave up five runs yesterday on Sunday's game. This is obviously Monday, September 21st. He's given up 14 home runs in 54 innings. That's a rate of 68 on the year. What is the record, gentlemen? Here's your trivia question for the most home runs allowed in a season by a pitcher.
I don't know.
Well, he's only pitched 2 months, though, so he's not.
No, but I'm saying at this rate, he would throw 68 on the year, okay? So my question, the record is Burt Blyleven, gave up 50.
Oh, that's right. Blyleven, what's our record in Detroit? I got to be close.
Well, you gave up 42 and 66 with 264 innings, but you gave up 35 and 31. By the way, the record for guys who led the league the most years in home runs allowed are all great pitchers. Yeah. Ferguson Jenkins did it 7 times, led the league. Robin Roberts did it 5 times, leading the league. Denny and Pedro Ramos are tied for third, giving it up, leading the league 3 times. You led the league in 66.
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
My dad used to tell me my dad took me to 47 games in 1968,
which is
more than Denny went to, and he played on the team.
That's right.
My dad used to tell me about Denny. He'd say, there's two things about Denny. The game's going to be 2 hours and 6 minutes, and he's going to give up a home run or two, but it's always going to be with nobody on base. Denny would give up a lot of solo home runs, didn't you, Denny?
A lot of them.
That's funny.
Trying to get to the chop house before they close.
There you go.
I'm going to change the topic here, and I still want to get into Bryson DeChambeau here. That could have been our lead story, and now we're 46 minutes into the show. We haven't talked about him yet. But you guys talked about Maria Taylor and the guy in Chicago who was from the score, Dan McNeil, who was fired for simply saying NFL sideline reporter or host for the AVN annual awards presentation. When I heard that last week, that's another one of those headlines that just, what? Can this be real? You know how many, remember Donald Trump said when Michael Cohen was paying him off, is what Cohen revealed in his book for the porn stars. You know, a lot of my constituents probably think that's kind of cool. And I don't think he's wrong in saying that at all. I mean, what guy doesn't fantasize having sex with a porn star? 99% would fantasize having sex with a porn star. So saying it, the audience must have loved it, and they fire him from this. This Rachel Williamson, regional president of Intercom, for our brands and on-air personalities, that is amplified and brings increased responsibilities how we choose our voices. Monday night's tweet is degrading and humbling. Shut up. Well, now we have more Maria Taylor. I thought you guys were soft on that one, but that's okay. Now we got more. Well, go ahead.
Count me out of the hookers. I mean, please keep me out of the hookers. All right. I've had enough trouble in my life without you putting me with hookers.
Well, technically, no one mentioned hookers.
So nobody said hookers.
Is there a difference?
Well, it's they're legal. Okay. Prostitution is illegal in most states, and pornography is legal in all states.
So, Eli, you thought we were being soft because we didn't rip the station for firing him, right?
That's right. Dan McNeil, you know, we could have said that on this show. Hey, she looked like she should be hosting the adult video, and everybody would have laughed and would be gone. But he works for Intercom, which is hyper, first of all, on the way out. I mean, this is radio. Yeah. They're in bankruptcy like most of the major radio. So they're so ridiculously careful. You can't even allow your guys to have some personality and joke around. I bet you Maria Taylor wasn't upset by it either, or she shouldn't have been. It was a
she was.
That she's
she was
that
upset.
Was she upset?
Yeah, she was upset.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she was definitely upset. But that's the world we live in now. It's so PC. I'm with you, Eli. It drives me crazy. I mean, we grew up with Don Imus, right? Yeah. I mean, the world drives me crazy now how politically correct we have to be. That's why we do podcasts, right?
And now Taylor, Maria Taylor, had to vote for the All-League in the NBA and left by accident Anthony Davis, who's probably the best offensive player in the league. And by the way, last night, won game two of right. the NBA Finals with a three-pointer at the buzzer.
Yeah.
And so Gottlieb, what's Gottlieb's first name?
Doug.
Doug Gottlieb said, why does Maria Taylor have a vote? Real question. She is a studio host, silent reporter on her first year covering the NBA. She works a ton, not just on the league. No reason for her to have a vote. And so he got beaten down for that one. He's right. Doris Burke doesn't have a vote, who played basketball and works the league every day, and she doesn't get a vote. So it's
so he got beaten down because she's in the media. She's the empathetic figure right now, right?
Right. Yeah. And her response was because I played basketball, I covered the league, and I deserve everything I've worked hard for. Okay. Whatever.
She also has hot privilege. Let's not forget that she's gorgeous. And
that's exactly what I was going to say. That's the reason she's got a vote.
Yeah. Right. And I disagreed with what you guys said a little bit about, because Paige is just all over the fact that he calls them the vapid sideline reporters.
Yeah.
You know, studio hosts. You know, when you're a studio host, you're just there to kind of facilitate the experts to say what they have to say. Hey, thanks for everybody in WCWA for listening. You can tune into the rest by downloading the podcast at nofiltersportscast.com. Thanks for listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Can we talk about golf? Anything else you guys want to say about anything? Okay.
Of course. Well,
any thoughts on Bryson DeChambeau? I have a lot. And rather than hog the show, I'll let somebody else go first. But
well, his well-told story of his rebuilt, reshaped body, his reshaped life, his pumping up, his eating more, he's bulked up. I mean, he won here in Detroit, as you know, the Rocket Mortgage Classic, and that was a precursor to a great summer for him. And he put it all together yesterday. I am amazed. If you watched Eli, you've watched the stiff arm he putts with and drives with. I'm amazed he can hit the ball and putt the ball that way. It's completely stiff. I can't remember think of anyone who ever did that.
Well, I'll tell you what he's doing. He's putting all the strength in his left arm. He's turning the with his left hand. He's turning it upside on the glove on the club head, not the club head, but the grip, and that gives you a lot more strength with your left hand. And he bashes the ball now. I mean, at one time he was not a long hitter. But boy, I tell you, you know what's amazing about him, though? Here's the most amazing fact. That grass in that golf course is awful. Just the worst grass in the world. I think I told you, I played it a couple times. He hit only 23 of 56 fairways, and he was the only guy under par. What does that tell you about the grass in the golf course?
It tells you that they have strength today. And they, you know, so now, you know, Tiger changed the game. I'm going to give Bryson a lot of credit because he's scientific. He's unconventional. He does things that so go against what conventional golf wisdom is. You know, you realize, of course, he makes all his irons and wedges the exact same length. So he has changed 400 years of golf, where the clubs are different lengths depending on how far you're supposed to hit the ball, as well as the lofts. He makes them all the exact same length. That has never been done before. And the bulking up as well. He also has the biggest grips that anyone has ever had. Jumbo Max grips. He does that. He's a scientist. He studied physics in college. He absorbs information. But you know, you said about the stiff, you know, maybe I get into trouble with this. Of course, if I was on Intercom, I get fired for this. But his long game is so different than the stylishness, let's say, of Tiger Woods, who changed the game. As Fred says, he looks very stiff, and yet, so he's kind of like a white guy power hitter, as opposed to somebody with real slick moves and agility, you know, with the wrists of Hank Aaron or the style of Tiger Woods, etc.
He's strong, or
Michael Jordan. He's strong. He's like Rocky Martin. He throws haymakers, but his coordination, his timing is still perfect. And, you know, it's the scientific thing that I think has turned a lot of people off. Well, I guess this person out too, but listen to what David Faraday said when he was just making these incredibly long drives, as well as he's made 90% of his putts from 10 feet and in. Think about that. Yeah, and even the last hole with the winding putt, and that he studied meticulously. He walked up on the green and walked. Now the players bitch about it because he takes too much time between shots, but it's all part of his information. He's a computer. Yeah. Here's what David Faraday had to say as Bryson was walking away with the tournament and in praise. Let's listen.
Is there a Nobel Prize for golf? If there was, you have to think this man would win it. A combination of science and athleticism, this cool thinking.
Well, it's really the artist versus the engineer out there, isn't it, David?
Yeah, it is. Left brain, right brain.
It's so over the top, for God's sakes, the Nobel Prize for golf. You know, we go back to the accolade time. I mean, the guy wins a golf tournament. He did not create peace in the Middle East. I mean, come on, guys. I mean, this is so far. And Faraday's a lunatic. I mean, he's got his television show, and he's going to do his shtick, and he's going to, just like Stephen A, says things just to get somebody's attention. Bottom line is, listen, next week when he shoots an 80, they won't even mention his name in the post game. So, you know, get ready.
Well, right. And he hasn't really changed. They're giving him over credit for changing the game. Yes. They're all doing the same thing. They all blast it as far as they can. Yeah. And they deal, as you said, with the thick rough. He's just doing it better. And he said last year, I'm going to gain 35 pounds to hit it farther. And that extra 15 or 20 yards, because a lot of times, whether you hit it 260 or 360, you still got a chance of going in the rough. So they say, why not just
That's hit it? Right. That's like, exactly yeah. right.
You know, I don't know how that works. I gained 35 pounds. I hit it half the way I used to.
That's because you can't turn.
Right.
but I think to see guys that were professionals and good players like Azinger was a major champion, and Roger Maltby was a great player, and Faraday was a very good player in his time. So here, this is I think the 14th hole, and he's already running away with it, and they're saying, why not play it? Remember how Tiger used to bump his way when he was ahead in the British Open by 10 strokes? He just hit an iron off the tee, just avoid the traps. He got a bogey. He just wanted to avoid the big score. So here, he's supposed to be playing, say, it's the 14th hole. It starts with Roger Maltby. Let's listen to what they said. I thought this is very emblematic of the praise of Bryson DeChambeau.
You know, I like 3-wood better than I like driver here.
Well, he went full bore with driver.
Yeah, he sure did, and he's trying to take it across the trees on the left-hand side. This may be perfect.
It is, Roger.
My goodness, yeah,
it is down there so far.
It's a different game, Gary. It's just a different game.
Well, let me say one thing about DeChambeau's a couple of weeks before the tournament. He went out every night for several hours and found the deepest grass he could to practice one night after another and another and another. So when he got there, he was ready. He was ready to play, because if he wasn't missing the number of fairways that he missed, he would have shot 100.
And he also he was also out there with his driver the night before,
right,
until
yeah,
it got dark.
That's exactly right.
Right. I'm trying to figure out, other than the fact that he plays slow, guys, why people don't like Bryson DeChambeau. I find him to be a pretty likable guy.
Plays too slow.
Okay, other than that, what's the problem? What's the rub?
Exactly.
On him,
you know, that's my question exactly. What's not to like about him?
He wins. I think that's why.
He's very intense. He sniped at a cameraman when he was here in Detroit.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever, right. But, you know, when somebody knows that they're good, they're smart, you know, really smart guys, don't fall for conventional wisdom, because they see the path, they determine what it takes to get there, and they follow it. And so, you know, he has confidence. He has incredible confidence because he knows he had the confidence to make all of his clubs the same length. He's able to do things different because he's smarter than the rest. And I think when you're really smart and scientific, people tend to discount you. And so he believes in himself. He knows what he's doing right. He knew that gaining the 40 pounds would help. In fact, here's the last thing I'll force you to listen to. This is what Azinger was talking as he was marching up, I believe it was the 18th fairway.
Tell you what, self-belief comes first. And Bryson has more self-belief than anybody maybe that's ever played the tour, because he's doing everything so counterintuitive to what everyone else has taught through the years.
So there you have it. He's cocky. He's sure. He knows he's right. And right now, except for Dustin Johnson, he's better than all the other guys. And so that's going to definitely create some resentment.
Well, he's had a great year. And yeah, I think that's a lot of it. I think the way he carries himself, he almost looks as though I'm a bad man and nobody's going to stop me. Maybe that rubs people the wrong way. But I think people just look for reasons not to like people who are successful. And I get tired of it.
I do too. And on top of that, I would much rather be Johnson anyway, because he got the $15 million from Federal Express. So he can keep the U.S. Open. Give me the $15
million. Interesting. We were talking earlier, Fred, about how fantasy football is down for a lot of reasons, because you know the people don't know if the season is going to happen. And that's one reason why the viewership is less that I brought up. You guys were searching for a reason. I think that's one of the reasons is that fantasy is down. So TV viewership is down. But golf overall is up. In June, almost 8 million more rounds were played than the previous June, a 14% increase. And that's because obviously the pandemic, people are desperate for something to go outside where they don't have to wear a mask. Some 15 million people who had never played golf are saying they were more interested in playing. And so, I think that's one reason why, the U.S. Open ratings are good and people are really into golf. And it's, I think of all the sports, it kind of televises the best without fans, but I really missed them yesterday. Walking up the 18th, there should have been some type of reaction. It really felt.
I agree with you. The event itself, when they're hitting the ball, you don't even notice the fans. But when they hit great shots, or when they walk up fairways, or you remember the day with Tiger, you wonder how he could even get through the crowd.
Right.
And they wanted to slap high fives. And they wanted to get through. I said, how does this man do it? That's what I miss, is it adds to the flavor of golf. But the game itself, it is very good on television. I could watch golf all day.
I know. Me too. Me too. Yeah. That shot of Tiger in 2018 when he won the FedEx Cup, and just that sea of people behind him. Walking up the 18th was just, incredibly memorable. I want to do this day in sports. We do have a few more spots. I have to remind you of a few more of our major sponsors, like Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. He served our listeners creating financial plans, business plans, and trusts. Let his track record of success and decades of experience create a custom solution for you. Call Luke at 248-663-4748. Set up a complimentary consultation. Let Luke do his thing. If you're comfortable, lay out a plan that fits your needs. So call Luke at 248-663-4748. Totally ethical, incredibly knowledgeable, and caring. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. And David Hall, he's been doing this for years. Interest rates are at a dramatic low. He is part of our community for over three decades, built this business, maintained leadership in this mortgage market, offers better options, more personal attention, thousands of satisfied clients. Call David Hall at 248-308-5000. Go to davidhallmortgage.com and get started. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention. And lastly, Feldman Automotive, Michigan's number one Chevy dealer. Five locations, Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. Nine locations in all. Hyundai of New Hudson, Kia of Novi, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven. And there's such a run on used cars, you can't find them anymore, but you can at Feldman. Number one pre-owned supercenter in Waterford, known simply as 100 Pre-Owned. Get a fully inspected, guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman and get the exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it or bring it back guarantee. With the kicker, their exclusive guaranteed credit approval. Let Feldman earn your business and at the same time support No Filter Sports. Buy online at FeldmanAuto.com with an effortless, hassle-free experience. Listening to the No Filter Sports podcast. And I got this day, no mailbag today. No Bob, no mailbag. How can we survive?
Oh, my goodness.
Can we even
gracious.
Call an official show?
I don't know.
We'll go to the post office later.
I think we could have a substitute mailbag host.
Really? Anybody want to volunteer?
Nope.
Brandon, I'm all right. I'm good. That's Bob specialty.
can't be imitated.
I gotta throw a couple things out. And the reason I do is because Bob's mailbag received quite the praise in the most recent flow of email and calls Again, you can go to our website, which is nofiltersportspodcast.com, and you can contact us there. There's a contact form and everything. Or, of course, you can email the show, which is asknofilter@gmail.com, or use the balls line. You can text us or call in 760-89-BALLS. Now, there was a couple people who did say that the expanded mailbag without Eli Zarrett was fantastic. So I got to give Bob Page a little bit of credit there. I know that he wants people to know that the mailbag is needed. So I'm sure he's going to have them collected.
And by the way, on one of the letters, it said tremendous mailbag delivered by Bob. Eli would have been apoplectic at the duration of the 176 mailbag. That's Kurt Kosmowski writing us. Also, though, through reading it for this reason, Fred was great and needs to be a more frequent guest. So yes, there we go.
We agree.
Nice.
It's nice to fool somebody.
Yeah. So, you know, I like this day in sports. Of course, we can only do it for a year because then I start talking about the same things all over again. But there's some very fascinating things. Now, again, I got a trivia for you. In 1955, on this day, Willie Mays became the seventh player to reach 50 home runs in a season. Think of that. I went back and looked at it. And since then, there have been 19 more. So in other words, the first 55 years of modern baseball from 1900 to 55, only seven players reached 50. 19 more have done it since. But of course, that's got a lot to do with the steroid era. I mean, Greg Vaughn, 50 homers. Brady Anderson, 50 homers. Prince Fielder, 50 homers. A rookie, Pete Alonso, 50 homers. So, you know, when you look back at history, the home run is kind of, is it cheapened the game, or is it cheapened the home runs, or did steroids do that? But I think the game was better back when you pitched, Denny, when hitting 50 home runs was remarkable. And to think about, before Willie Mays, only six had done it: Ruth, Hack Wilson, Jimmy Fox, Hank Greenberg, Johnny Mize, and Ralph Kiner. And it's,
well, the difference too is the ballparks are a little bit bigger back then too. I mean, when you talk about Tiger Stadium and what have you, I mean, the ballparks really were, in some cases, dramatically different. Look at Yankee Stadium. I mean, God, you got to hit it 1,000 feet.
Not down right field line was a short porch. Not
yeah,
true.
But that, yeah, but I understand that. Every park has got its own characteristics. Look at Boston with the big green monster out there. But no, I think the biggest difference, there's two differences. Number one, the ballparks are a little bit smaller. But secondly, the pitching is so bad. You know, we've got exceptions, obviously. You got the Verlanders and guys like that. But you don't have enough of those guys that make a difference when it comes to home runs. I mean, there's a guy yesterday, I don't know, I forgot what team, I think Baltimore. He throws the first eight pitches of the game, gives up three home runs. I mean, excuse me.
Well, the pitching is still pretty good, Denny, but there's more teams now.
The pitching is not good, more, Fred. Don't even go there. The league ERA, for God's sake, is a 10.
And there are more pitchers on every staff, so you get a lot more bad pitchers. One thing I thought you were going to mention that Jack Morris mentions on the Tiger telecast is, and a lot of these old-timers feel that the ball is wound tight. It is livelier than ever. You don't think so?
No,
I
don't.
I was going to ask you about that last week. You don't think the ball is juiced?
I'm sorry. The ballpark is smaller. It makes it look juiced. I'm telling you, and bad pitching. Just sit there during the game tomorrow night and count the number of pitches that are not anywhere near the catcher's glove. Just count them. It'll be more than 50, 55, 60%.
Why should that be?
I'm going to believe it.
Why would pitching get worse if batting has?
Because they don't leave them in the minor leagues well enough. They're coming out of high school. They're coming out of college. And if you can throw a little curveball and a little slider like Mize did, he'll win a lot of games in college. But as soon as you step up with the big boys can handle that garbage.
I disagree, yes, Denny. I think that you've got more guys now that are throwing fire and throwing faster pitches than ever before. But I think the home runs are all on two keys. The ball is juiced. I don't care what anybody says, because when they moved to the MLB ball in the minor leagues, guess what happened? Tons more home runs. There's got to be a reason for that, right? And the second thing is launch angle. People have decided, instead of slapping the ball and going for the base hit, I am going to swing upwards and I'm going to hit every single ball I can.
You're right.
They don't produce the runs anymore.
Launch angle has led to a strikeout or home run mentality with a lot of these guys.
Oh yeah, I agree with that. Those are great points, man.
Thing about it, they've always said if you can hit home runs, you'll drive a Cadillac, right?
That's right.
But Denny, all these guys coming out of the bullpen now, I mean, they're all throwing 96.
So what? So what? Lots of guys have thrown the ball at 95, 96. Lots of guys. I mean, listen, big league hitters can hit. Yeah, give you my word. And a lot of times, the faster you throw a ball, the more straight it becomes. Look at Dave DeBuscher. Nobody threw the ball harder than Dave DeBuscher at whatever, 6'7", 6'8", what he was. By the time he let the ball go, he was standing right on top of the batter's box, for God's sakes. And I'm going to tell you, he threw it. But everything he threw was as straight as a ruler.
Do you remember Julio Navarro?
Yeah, sure.
They called him Whiplash, and somebody once told me that he whipped it in, and they lashed it out.
They lashed it out. They certainly called him Whiplash. Did. Absolutely, yeah. Julio, a.k.a. Paso Chico. You know, and he's a pretty good guy, but you're right. You're absolutely right. But that's part of the problem. The pitching has gotten very bad. And again, you three guys, take a look tomorrow night. Just watch the first five or six innings and see the percentage of pitches that they miss.
And not only that, as Jack was pointing out the other night, and I do like listening to Jack talk about pitching. He was saying, look at how many times he does not hitting where the glove is.
Right.
And there was a couple of pitches that he said, just as a strike, to me, it was the type of pitch he wanted to throw, because to be holding his glove low and inside, it'll be a strike, you know, middle of the plate on the outside.
Middle of the plate or outside, yeah.
This day, believe it or not, in both in 82 and 87, the NFL players went on strike 57 days in 82. And 24 days in 87 where they use substitute players. But I don't know what's better, to play football with no fans or to just have them not play football at all. And to show how money has come around, in a record contract in 1973, Nate Archibald, 7 years, $450,000. That's less than $70,000 a year, was a record contract.
Oh my God.
For a seven-year deal. Of course, the merger happened a few years later, and then with the ABA, there was competition for salaries, and they went up.
But I had a 3-year deal in 68 for 90.
Oh. Yeah, which is
a year per year.
30,000. No, yeah. Oh, really?
In 60? Yeah, 3 years. Yeah.
Wait a minute. You had to fight to get that, didn't you?
No.
Scream and holler and jump off the desk.
Wait a minute. You were paid $30,000 in 1968.
Yes, and then I went to 60. Then okay. I went to 60, and I got a 3-year deal after that. When I went 24, I got a 3-year deal at 90.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right.
Cy Young. Oh, you're still going?
Cy Young won his 511th game in 1911 on this day, beating Pittsburgh 1-0. There's a record that will never be broken.
Yeah, I thought you being a boxing guy, you were going to go Rocky Marciano. Are you still getting to that?
Yeah, I was going to get to that in his last fight. Yeah. I was going to look up, though, how old Archie Moore was at the time, because Archie Moore fought until he was he fought until his 50s, I think, and Muhammad Ali beat him when he was coming up in 1963, which is 8 years after that. But yes, Rocky Marciano, who
I was at Yankee Stadium. Did you ever see a fight in Yankee Stadium?
I did. I saw the
did you really?
The third Norton Ali fight in Yankee Stadium.
Did you really?
1976. Wow. I told you. I'll mention that story because it's one of my greatest sports stories. I'm a big boxing fan. I'm sitting ringside, second row, waiting for Ali Norton. And this is back when the Superfly days, man, and they were all going to come and watch Ali fight Norton. And I'm sitting in Yankee Stadium, so one of the preliminary fights is on. And it was two top 10 heavyweights, Ernie Shavers.
Oh, my goodness.
I can't think of who the other guy was, but there were two top 10 heavyweights, and they're slugging it out. I'm engrossed in the fight, and suddenly there are only about 2,000 people in the stadium because it's early, and everybody's eyes are shifting to the right. And I go, what could they be watching better than the fight? In about the 20th row, a comedian named Slappy White, who was wearing a jumpsuit.
Oh, my God, right? Slappy White.
One of his people, or two of his, some of his people, are getting into an argument over seats, and they're throwing chairs at each other. I go, oh, my God. You got two of the finest pugilists in the world, Henry Clark, two of the finest pugilists in the world right here in the ring, and they're watching amateurs throwing chairs at each other. And it made me think about the difference between unrehearsed mayhem like that were rubberneckers as opposed to the Marquise of Queensberry's rules where guys couldn't hit anybody over the head with a chair. But yes, that was a wild
game. I don't know about you, Denny, but if I had the option, I'd watch the guys in the stands throw chairs too.
That's what everybody that's
probably true. And you want to stay a safe distance away from the chair.
There you go. From a distance, those are fun to watch. Up close, it's get the hell out of the way.
That's exactly right.
That's all I got for this. Bobby Riggs beat Billie Jean King, or Billie Jean King beat Bobby Riggs in the Battle of the Sexes tennis match. We talked about that recently when it was planned, but anyway.
I don't know if you guys saw this. Deion Sanders has taken the head coaching job at Jackson State. How about that?
And who's the most famous Jackson State alum who ever played for the Lions?
Lem Barney.
The great Lem Barney. Yes, indeed.
Good man. Lem Barney. Yep.
Well, any final notes? That's all I got for today, boys.
Well, that's all I got, boys.
Fred, anything? You good?
That means that's all I got, too.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. Bob Page, if you can figure out how to plug in a USB connector to the appropriate slot, we'll be back with us on Thursday. Until then, thanks for listening to No Filter Sports.
Hasn't this been fun?
Yeah. It has been fun. I haven't gotten angry at my coworkers once during this show.
Get that mailbag ready, Bob. We could win a podcast Emmy.
So long, everybody.
Stay safe. Bye-bye.
I was arrested by Clinton Township Police Department. And when I was laying in the bed that night, I remembered a friend had told me about this program, Hope Not Handcuffs. Immediately after being released, I walked to the front counter and I said, I need help, can you please call someone? And the police officers there, they called Hope Not Handcuffs for me. An angel came out and it saved my life.
The first step doesn't need to be the hardest. Let us guide you to recovery. Go to HopeNotHandcuffs.com to learn more.